Drawing room over here.
Oh, hey, come on in. When she was growing up, author Barbara Arrowsmith Young was told she'd never be able to learn. Her teachers wrote her off. Now she's got a master's degree in school psychology and she's written an international best-selling book. The book is called The Woman Who Changed Her Brain, and that's quite literally what she's done. Barbara, welcome to the drawing room. Now, when you were in grade one, your primary school teacher pointed out that something that stayed with you. She questioned your ability to learn. Can you recount that story, what that meant to you?
They didn't even have the term learning disability or learning difficulty at that time, because this was the late 1950s. So I overheard the teacher telling my mother that I had a mental block. And I had a lot of problems with comprehension, so I actually thought I had a wooden cube in my head that made learning difficult. And what she said was I would always experience schooling as a difficulty. I feel like I was given a life sentence in year one that basically accept my limitations, that's what I was told, and that I wouldn't amount to much and don't expect much because of my struggles.
Did you know there was an issue before this teacher raised it? Had your parents picked it up? Had it emerged in your own life?
Well, I knew before I actually started school that something was wrong. Not necessarily academically, but I was incredibly uncoordinated. And later I learned that was part of my brain that registered sensation and the location of the left side of my body. I did not know where half of my body was in space. So incredibly accident prone, falling, banging into things. And in fact, my mother felt I would not survive past the age of five because we spent a lot of time in emergency rooms. I was getting stitched up. And so I knew there was something off there, but it was really once I started in year one, which was my first foray into the educational situation, that things were really off. I could see other students learning how to read, learning how to write, learning how to do simple addition and subtraction, and I couldn't do that. I read things backwards, wrote things backwards. If somebody gave me two-digit numbers, I would add them randomly. There was no order, no reason, no sense in my world. I actually got the strap in grade one. I think my teacher was so frustrated. She thought I was writing backwards, making my notebooks messy, not learning the way I should willfully, that I was just being difficult. I got labeled as stubborn and rigid in grade one. So for me, there was no joy in learning. Beginning my schooling, I had tremendous anxiety. I did not walk through the classroom door excited about learning.
The education system was essentially failing you if you didn't walk through that door with any positive feeling. Can you explain what challenges you then faced after that point through your schooling years?
Mm-hmm. Well, eventually, mainly because of my mother, I did learn how to read and to write and do basic numeracy. She drilled me with flashcards. So I joke that I became a workaholic in grade one. The school was right across the street. I'd come home at lunch, flashcards would come out. I'd come home after school, flashcards would come out. But I'm very lucky that she did that. So eventually it looked like I was being educated because I did learn how to read and to write and do numbers. But the fundamental ability to comprehend and understand my world was not there. I did have a phenomenal memory, an auditory memory. I could just listen to things and memorize them like a tape recorder. And I had a phenomenal visual memory, photographic memory, so I could memorize my notebooks. And that's how I got through school, sadly. No comprehension, but memorizing everything. And then when I would look at the exam question, I would hope I understood it, not necessarily ever being sure whether I did. And then I flipped through my notebooks and matched something that I thought matched with that question. So sometimes I get 90%, but then sometimes I get 10%. And my teachers would conclude if I could get 90%, I must not have been studying for that 10%. Well, I studied equally hard to get 10% as 90. And that's what is confusing when you see someone with a learning difficulty. They have a brain that's capable and incapable at the same time, and it does present a confusing picture. But I did not understand. I lived in fear all the time that someone would ask me something and show that, you know, I wasn't intelligent.
You mentioned that it was a learning difficulty, and the whole term learning difficulty is just so broad. Have you since got it diagnosed to find out exactly what this particular difficulty was?
Well, I self-diagnosed, I mean, by going into Lurie's work, who's a Russian neuropsychologist that really was fundamental in mapping a lot of the functions and regions of the brain. For me, I think in the work that I do, it's more powerful to go under the label. So to go under dyslexia, go under auditory processing, visual sensory integration, because to address the problem, we have to actually understand its fundamental nature. And we can see students with, you know, the same label, and they each have a different cognitive profile. So for me, it was looking at, you know, what wasn't working in my brain. And going through school, I didn't know it was my brain. It wasn't until I got into graduate school and someone handed me this book by Alexander Luria, The Man with a Shattered World, telling the story of a Russian soldier who had a very localized head wound during World War II. And in his journal, the soldier's journal, he was using exactly the same language, you know, several decades earlier, half a world away, that I was using in my journal, talking about we lived in a fog, meaning was ephemeral, it disappeared into a mist. We could never grasp things. He couldn't tell time after his wound. I was now 25. I couldn't read a clock. I couldn't tell time. I couldn't understand things like bigger than, less than, fractions, anything relational. I couldn't understand jokes. I was vulnerable to con artists because you understand that you're being conned by hearing logical inconsistencies. There was no logic in my world, so no logical inconsistencies. So for me, I had to understand what does that part of the brain do, and then could I find an activity or task to stimulate it and to work it.
Barbara, it seems that you approached what you were experiencing in a really methodical, intellectual way, which I find fascinating given what you're also describing. Did you get assistance from your family to do that? Because you talk about your mum with the flashcards, and I've got a picture of what that must look like. But was it a journey that you got support with?
I didn't get support. I got with my father. He was an inventor and a scientist, and he had this belief that if there's a problem and there's no solution in the world, it's your responsibility to go out and find a solution. And then he said, if the rest of the world tells you you can't do it, he said, don't be limited by conventional wisdom. He said, this is how science goes forward. So I had that belief instilled in me very early. I had no idea how I was going to do this, but I did have a belief that there had to be a better way than compensating, like trying to work around, heroic effort. I was now you know, working 7 days a week, 20 hours a day, sleeping 4 hours a night. I impacted my immune system. I now have an immune system disorder, which we know can go along now with learning difficulties, all the stress hormones that get generated. So I feel like I was set on a quest or a mission, not knowing whether I would be successful or not. And this is when I came across in August of 1977, I'll never forget that time, when somebody handed me this book, The Man with a Shattered World. And I dedicate my book to Alexander Luria because I would not be alive today if someone hadn't given me this book, because I was feeling such despair. I just saw no future for myself. And this gave me hope.
On RN, I'm Patricia Carvelis. This is The Drawing Room, and tonight I'm speaking with Barbara Arrowsmith-Young. She's the author of the international bestseller, The Woman Who Changed Her Brain. So let's get to that moment. You get this book, you start studying the text. What did you learn, and what did it help you set out to do?
Well, I first learned where my problem was. And to solve a problem, you have to understand its nature. So now I knew it was my brain. I mean, before that, I knew I had really significant problems, but no idea the source of the problem. So this, the first step was I've identified the problem. Now the next piece, which I discovered very close on to getting The Man with the Shattered World, was the work of Mark Rosenzweig, a psychologist at Berkeley in California. And he was looking at this concept of neuroplasticity with rats. And neuroplasticity just is our brain is capable of change across our lifespan with the correct stimulation, correct experience. And all of my schooling, the belief was our brain isn't plastic, it's fixed. You know, you have a difficulty, it's lifelong, you have to accept it. Now there was a glimmer here with rats, and I felt if rats could change their brains and become better learners, surely humans must be able to do that. And there wasn't really anybody discussing that. I mean, first at that time, when I talked to people and said, I think learning disabilities have something to do with the brain, I was told, no, they don't. I'm not sure where they thought they were, but it definitely wasn't the brain. And then when I said, and maybe there's plasticity, well, even if they did have something to do with the brain, we know there's no plasticity. So I just thought, I'm desperate. I need to try something. So I went out and created the first exercise for myself. And, you know, 4 months into doing that exercise, you know, many, many, many hundreds of hours, saw huge change in my cognitive functioning. So I now knew there was human neuroplasticity, and I was living proof, because I could now do things that with the best will in the world and the most incredible effort, I could not have done prior to going through this cognitive exercise that I'd created.
What was this exercise that you created?
It was actually clocks. And, you know, I was 25, 26, couldn't read a clock because I couldn't see the relationship between the hour hand and the minute hand to be able to understand it. And I created the exercise using clocks, not that I wanted to get better at telling time, which ultimately happened, so I can now tell time, but I needed to find an activity that would force my brain to process relationships. And Luria talked in his book that, you know, somebody with the problem that I felt I now had in my brain, they couldn't interpret and read time. So I picked clocks, and I was really pathetic because I couldn't do it. But over time, like hundreds of hours practicing drawing clocks, reading clocks, I started to get really fast and accurate. And that was great, so I could tell time, but I wasn't really feeling change. And now we know that you have to add cognitive complexity. Like, you have to keep making the task more difficult. So I added another hand and then another hand. So by the time I was processing four relationships simultaneously, that's when I had my breakthrough. And what I've learned, you know, now working with thousands and thousands of students, is that it's about average functioning in that cognitive area. I can now listen to conversations and understand them. Before, I could not have had this conversation with you. I would memorize what you said to me. I'd walk away. I'd play it over and over and over again and then think, oh, I think that's what she said. But by that time, you'd no longer be here, you know, so I couldn't come back and have a discussion. I was now part of human discourse. I could listen to conversations. I could appropriately answer questions, be part of the dialogue. It was so profound to be part of human discourse and be able to relate to people in that way. I could also read a page on a book and understand it as I was reading it, whereas before I might read that page 5, 10, 15 times. Because what Luria talked about in my experience was, with that difficulty, you can never verify meaning. So you're walking around in a constant state of uncertainty, which creates tremendous anxiety, sort of like you're in this fog, this cloud of the unknowing.
You've set up schools now in Canada, in the US, and here in Australia. The Arrowsmith program is now taught, what, in 21 schools?
23 here in Australia
23
now.
In Australia now. Incredible. How does the program work?
Well, we train teachers. I mean, when I saw these results, and then I started my own school in Toronto because I wanted to help people. And not everybody had the same difficulties I had. So people would come through the door, describe their problems. I'd go back into Luria, read it, try to understand, create exercises. And over time, have gotten to the point where we have exercises for 19 different cognitive functions, from reading nonverbally, auditory memory, quantification sense, reasoning, thinking, problem solving, face blindness. And I thought, I need to take this work out into the world beyond just my school in Toronto to help other students. So I thought the best way to do this is train teachers and work with educational organizations. So my commitment is to ensure that every child in this program gets the best possible program, and that's to support and educate the teachers. So I'm really excited to see this.
So Barbara, you've changed your own brain. Is that an ongoing process?
Interestingly, it isn't. I mean, we use the analogy that the brain's like a muscle, but in a sense, I think what happens is once that cognitive function is working the way it was designed to, it now gets its own stimulation in everyday activities because it's just being engaged and used, that concept of use it or lose it. Whereas before, when it was weak and not really functioning, it was a drag on the whole neural network, the whole system. What I've seen is people 35 years out of the program, 30 years out of the program, 25 years out of the program, there's no drop-off in cognitive function, and they don't have to keep doing the exercise. And I hypothesize it's because they're using those cognitive functions every day in their everyday life.
Barbara, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And that's Barbara Arrowsmith-Young. She's the creator and director of the Arrowsmith School and Arrowsmith Program. She's also the author of the international bestseller, The Woman Who Changed Her Brain, and she's been my guest tonight in The Drawing Room.
This Is About is a podcast hosted by Jordan Raskopoulos. That's me. Stories told by those who live them.
To do a good job, you kind of have to believe that you're Spider-Man.
He was holding what he claimed was Ned Kelly's skull.
She just said to me, if you can't have this baby, I'll have a baby for you.
What I thought was two different dolphins was just one shark.
What? This is About on the ABC Radio app or wherever you get your favourite podcasts.
Listen now.
On your phone.
You know, just do the thumb thing.